Ladies and gentlemen, it is my honor to present to you your hosts for the Married with Board Games podcast, Spencer and Laura Williams.
Hey, Laura.
Hey.
Are you feeling blue?
No, not. Why?
Well, we're going to talk about a game called Azul today.
Ooh, aren't you?
Do you
fancy.
Like how clever I am?
Yes, with your Spanish speaking.
Okay, so I'm really bad at trying to make a fun introduction to the show. Hey everyone, I'm Spencer.
I'm Laura.
And you are listening to the fun and awesome Married with Board Games podcast. We talk about games.
We do.
And we talk about them from our perspective, which just happens to be a married perspective.
What a coincidence. It's called Married with Board Games.
Yay. So if you're a new listener, welcome. We're glad to have you. Stick around. Actually, why don't we go ahead and tell everybody what we're going to talk about on the show today.
Okay. Well, we do have a special guest.
We do. We have a special guest, and his name is Mike Young. And he'll talk about who he is and what he does later on in the show.
And he's going to discuss with us our top five lists of gateway games.
Yes, gateway games. Games that are great to introduce to people that aren't aware of the current awesomeness of board games. Sorry, I'm getting so excited.
That's a good way to put it. I would have just said non-hobbyists,
yeah.
But you know. To each his own.
So this is great for either if you're trying to bring your friend or your spouse into the hobby,
mm-hmm.
or if you yourself have not really explored much. These will be great games for you to take a look at.
Oh, yeah. I agree. And so, yeah, we will be getting to that later on.
Cool.
But first, we have a couple of announcements.
We do. All right. I'll start with this one.
All right. You do it.
So we've been doing our top 100 games of all time.
Yes.
And that's over on the Dice Towers YouTube channel.
Mm-hmm.
We've done 40 games at this point. Do you realize we've talked about 40 games already?
Oh, man. I believe it.
Yeah.
It was so hard compiling that list.
Yeah. So
and
we've got,
so, yeah.
We've got 60 more to go, not quite halfway. and they release on Fridays and Saturdays until we're done. And so we'll continue again this Friday. Be watching for those. We'll share them all over social media, whatever that stuff's called.
Oh, what are them kids calling it nowadays? The social medias.
You'll probably get tired of it by the time we get
interwebs.
You'll get really excited. Hey, there you go. You'll get really excited. And we actually have had some great feedback on these. And
we have,
people
yes.
People are very nice.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Which, I mean, let me just throw this out here on the cuff. We've also gotten some new YouTube subscribers out of this.
We have.
And so I'm just curious, what kind of other videos besides reviews or these top lists would you guys be interested in seeing on
Ooh.
Our YouTube channel separate
yeah.
from the Dice Towers channel? So
more miscellaneous type stuff, maybe?
Possibly.
Yeah.
Maybe would you like to watch me cook one of the Game Night Grub recipes?
Oh, that's a good idea. Would you like to see us?
Would you like me to do like the tasty videos on Facebook where
yeah.
it's like you don't even see me, it's just my hands?
The dice.
Like the water.
Yeah, how
water. To make ice. You know, or something like that.
You could teach people how to play a game.
That's true.
We could do a quick video.
Yeah, we could do any of those things.
Or we could have our daughter review a game.
That could be fun too. Oh, that would be precious. So guys, just let us know. Reach out to us on social media. And we will be getting to those things later. We've got another announcement though.
Oh, this is a big one.
Is it?
Well, it's official. I haven't done any social medias on this.
No social medias.
You're hearing it here first.
You're hearing it here first, folks.
Yep.
What is it?
Well, it's you. I'm giving it to you.
Oh, okay. Well, we are going to be at BGGCon.
What is BGGCon?
That's Board Game Geek Con.
In Dallas.
It's here in Texas.
Texas, all hail the mighty state.
Texas
That's
our
pride
song.
Right here, born and raised. So, for those going, we want to see you. We want to meet you. We want to say hi. We are volunteering at the
Bezier booth.
Bezier Games booth, the games that all the werewolf games and the
Yes, if they're still doing what they were doing at Dice Tower Con, you'll be able to find us by the booming subwoofer that will be playing Werewords.
Yeah. So we'll be there for part of the day. The other parts of the days we'll be roaming around playing games with people.
Yes.
So find us, say hi, play a game with us. We are so excited.
It's going to be awesome.
Okay, So enough about announcements.
Enough.
Let's talk about games.
Let's do it.
We got some two great games to talk about today.
Right, and you already hinted at one.
Yes, and that is Azul. Azul, however you want to say it, with whatever kind of accent you want to.
Oh, are you doing Azul like the Barcelona?
I don't know. I've heard people say Azul, and I say Azul because I'm Texan.
Yeah, me but, too.
But this is from Play and B Games, and by golly, this is a beautiful game.
It's so nice.
So the premise of this is you're like trying to build a tile wall, like almost like ceramic tiles, you know?
Honestly,
like
I kind of think of it as what Chili's used to have as their Chili's tables.
Yes, that's exactly what I was thinking too.
Not a wall. I'm building my Chili's yes. table.
So you have these player boards that on one side, it's like this pattern of the different color of tiles that are available in the game.
Mm-hmm.
You've got like this pinkish red color.
Right.
Beautiful tiles, beautiful colors with different designs on them.
Uh-huh.
All great. And so there's specific places you want to put on this your player board in order to build this wall.
Right. Each row only has one of each of the tiles.
Right. And they're in different order on each row.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not the same. On the opposite side has what looks like half of a pyramid. So
yeah, kind of like stair steps.
Yeah. So the top row has one square, the second row has two squares, and so on and so forth, down to, I think, five.
It's 5x5 grid, yeah. Right, yeah.
And so what's happening in this game is you also have another area where these different tiles are going to be placed. They're on what is called your factory tiles. So
Spencer calls them coasters.
They look like coasters, but whatever. I won't use them for drinks. And so you've got a bag, and you draw randomly just a handful, I think it's four, of these
yes,
tiles.
Yes, for each of the factory.
Yep, and you put on those little tiles, and each person is going to take a turn going around and do a drafting phase. You pick all tiles of one color
mm-hmm.
from
the group.
So if there's one blue tile, you take that one. But if there are three blue tiles and one pink, you take all blue, and then the pink goes to the middle.
Whatever you don't pick up.
Yes.
Because there might be some black and some other colors there, too.
Right.
They all get shoved into the middle.
On further turns, if you don't want to pick from one of those factory tiles, you can opt to choose from the middle.
What's also there is the first player token.
Yep.
So that next round, you're going to be the first player.
Yep.
But you also are going to lose a point.
Yes. So that's a big thing. Before we get to that, though, as rounds go over and over and over, and people start, you know, setting aside the tiles they don't want, that pot in the middle gets bigger.
Mm-hmm.
So you can start.
Eventually, somebody's going to have to take from there.
Right. So
yeah.
You can start. Eventually, you're going to be gaining more than likely, more tiles
definitely,
at a time.
Because some of those rows, I mean, they go up to five tiles.
Yeah.
And you're not going to get five on the little, on the coasters.
Right. So what happens is when you gain these tiles, you place them down on that stair step area. And you put them down. You can only put tiles of the same likeness on each row. Once all of those tiles are selected, there aren't any more, you go over to those rows.
Mm-hmm.
And for every row that's filled up, you slide the tile that's over to the rightmost side over to the corresponding row in your wall.
Mm-hmm.
And you place it in its corresponding color.
Right.
And everything else that you didn't place on that row that was filled up, you discard.
Right.
Now, you can only place tiles of the same type on each row, so you can't mix and match on each row
mm-hmm.
of that preloading area.
Right.
And so sometimes you'll get stuck with tiles you can't place. So there's an area at the bottom that's like the floor. Like the tiles fell down, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there are slots on that floor that have negatives on them.
Yes.
So you lose points for tiles that you can't place in that staging area, which goes back to your first player token thing, which will take up one of those slots.
Mm-hmm.
So the goal is, the game is over when one row on your wall, when one player's wall is fully complete, right?
Okay, yeah.
And then, so you gain points based on whenever you put a tile down, tiles that it touches in the same row, or tiles that it touches in the same column.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know, I won't get into how the specifics of that work, but that's how you gain points. Then at the end of the game, you get points based on for however many vertical columns.
Count up,
you get.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some special ways to gain extra points. But that's really it. There's not much going on as far as, you know, the mechanics. And how to, you know, on your turn, you're basically just taking tiles and placing them down in the staging area and then eventually moving them over to the wall.
Yeah.
Did I miss anything as far as the gameplay goes, really?
Well, I mean, the only other thing is that you don't want to focus on just one color of tile.
Yeah.
You get some extra points, like you were talking about there at the end of the game, for counting up those tiles. And one of those things is having five tiles of a color represented on your wall. And that's tough to do.
It is, but it's the most, you get the most points out of all the bonuses at the end. You get 10 points for that.
Man.
So that is a game changer if you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'll be honest, that's what I was focused on in our most recent play.
Yeah.
And I didn't win because I wasn't able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I got stuck. And because the further down you get on that wall, the more difficult it is to move those tiles over because
you've already got some of them in there.
We have them in there, and then you've got five slots to fill before you can move one over.
True.
So it takes more time and more tiles to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I personally found the game very enjoyable.
Oh, yes.
On the surface, it's very basic as far as you're just drawing these tiles. But as the game progresses, it gets very strategic as far as, number one, for you, right? Making the right choices about what tiles to get, how to best utilize those spaces, you know, the timing on that, you know, because you want them all to touch, you want to make sure you've built up other tiles for future tiles to touch so you can increase your multiplier,
your rows and your columns.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But you're also looking at your opponent, right?
You can ruin what they're planning.
Mess up. And that happened on several occasions where your opponent, you can see, you know, they might really need those blue tiles. But if you take them for you, they're going to be stuck with tiles they don't need. But they have to take them because on your turn, you have to take tiles.
Yes.
And if you have no place for them to go, then they're going to end up on the floor.
Right.
And cost you points.
Definitely.
So...
And you know, it's funny because you talk about that, about how the game gets more strategic as it goes.
Mm-hmm.
This is by Plan B Games. They also put out Century Spice Road.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that happens in that game as well. As you are building that engine,
mm-hmm.
You have to get more strategic as it goes. After a while, you've outgrown some of the lower ranks of your engine. And
mm-hmm.
I feel like that's the same way. That's kind of a recurring theme. That's what they seem to be good at doing.
Yeah.
But that's also something we're going to get to talk to our guest about more later.
Yeah. But I really enjoyed this one. I like that it does provide a real base level of decisions, but also, like I said, as it progresses. And it really eases you into the game, too,
mm-hmm.
as far as you're not slammed with right there at the beginning, what do I do?
Well, that and I also like how the turn progression, it's very quick.
Oh my gosh, it's quick.
And simple.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that it's mm-hmm. not a... I mean, I would hope that people wouldn't get analysis paralysis with this. Mm-hmm. I could kind of see a potential for it, but at the same time, it's like, come on, man, loosen up. Just pick a tile.
Yeah. But it's a excellent balance and... For those that want more thinky games, I think this provides an opportunity for that.
Yes.
But for those that don't want a thinky game, this is your cup of tea too, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah.
And as far as there being a theme to it, you're building a wall, but it's really an abstract strategy game.
Definitely.
So don't get invested with that. But for a great produced game and fun to play game, I definitely recommend this one. What about you?
Yes, I agree with that. And that's Azul from Plan B Games. Also, we have a review coming out for this one as well. And this is Hospital Connect.
Bless you.
Thank you. And what an interesting theme.
Yeah.
And we discussed this, that it's about coal mining.
Woo!
You better get excited. We're going to do some coal mining.
Yes.
This is a fun game.
It's an excellent game. I was very surprised by it. You know, I didn't know what to expect going into this. I really didn't.
So as you can probably guess, it's called Hospital Connect. That's a German term. So this is kind of a Euro game.
Yeah.
And so first off, the production is great. Wooden components and a cardboard board there.
Mm-hmm.
And basically this is, it's medieval, right? The medieval era?
I don't know about medieval. I think it's like the 1700s, maybe.
Okay. This is...
Or 1600s.
Coal mining in the 17th century, then, of which is very primitive. You're digging out the coal and you have to clear out water. And you only get 3 years to really get this going for this village. You've got workers that you use to clear out the coal, and all of this is determined with a really great disc selection.
Disc action selection mechanism.
Drafting kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which is super cool. The way it works out.
Yeah.
Which again, I'm just gonna plug it that you really want to check out our review to look at these components, because and to see Spencer kind of demonstrates how all of that works, because it's kind of hard for me to explain it here on a podcast without you seeing it.
Exactly.
But there are these discs in a bag. There are three different colors: yellow, black, and brown. Yellow is for food production. The brown is for lumber production, and then coal is for removing things from the mine. Coal or mine water.
Pit water.
Pit water. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I don't know. I guess the word pit, it just,
because it makes you think of armpit.
Yeah.
Brad Pitt.
Not so much. Not my cup of tea, personally.
Barbecue pit.
Okay. Anyway, these tiles are drawn at random from a bag and distributed on this card. Mm-hmm. And you have to, kind of like what we were just talking about with Azul, you have to pick up all of the same color from these areas on this card. And that's going to determine your actions for that round. And there are four seasons in 3 years. And there are certain goals you have to meet as far as like food production for your city. As well as clearing out the mines, like, cause there's a beginner mine.
It's called the Pinge.
Okay, the Pinge. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You learned all these mining terms.
I did.
That's really cool. Mm-hmm. The Pinge, which is like your little beginner mine.
It's like a surface level. What's on the top of this?
Yeah. Right. So you have to clear that out first, which you get an extra point on the point track if you get it done in the first year.
Then you get 2 points if you get done the first year.
Oh.
1 point if you get done the second year.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And after that, that's cleared out. And then what's revealed is your Hospital Connect. Mm-hmm. And that's what you use. It almost looks like, it makes me think of a well.
Yeah.
That you're like lowering. Yeah. It's a pulley system.
Yeah, he's the guy that turns the crank that pulls the coal up from the coal mine.
Or the pit water.
Or the pit water.
Gross. And it's in that progression of going deeper and deeper into the mine, but as you go, you have to reinforce the mine, that the tunnel that you've dug, with wood, and you can't remove the coal from that section until it's been reinforced with the wood, and so you need those discs in order to do that. It's really neat.
Every action, everything that you do in this game makes sense thematically.
Every action has an equal...
Well, that's...
an opposite...
Well, yeah.
Reaction.
Possibly. Not exactly what I was going for. You stated it very well in our review, is that nothing's really contrived here.
Oh.
Everything that you do makes sense thematically.
Yes.
You put wood up. It's not just to put a piece of wood on the board. It's you're trying to dig deeper.
Right. Yeah. And so, yeah. And what I meant by that, what I was saying that for, is that it's not that your mind won't click with your head, with your mind, it won't click with your head.
Yeah.
What am I saying? I mean, it's going to click.
Yeah.
Very easy. I think it's going to be very easy to understand because of how much sense each of those things make. And that's just incredible because we love theme.
Yeah.
And this theme is just, it's not pasted on at all.
No. Well, and I like, so you talked about all that, but then in addition to that, there are these development tiles that you can use your farmer to gain through the use of those discs. And there are additional upgrades, like more buildings onto your farm to store resources from year to year.
Uh-huh.
Or, you know, extra actions to do from your turns.
Or money.
Yeah. And then, you know, so there's a lot to explore in this game. And I like that.
Mm-hmm.
You're not just stuck mining coal, which is fine. That's ideally the idea of the game, because each round, or at the end of each year, you get points based on how much coal you've mined.
Right.
The more you mine, the better, more points you get.
But you also want to be able to feed your workers and pay them.
Yeah, and you can make that better through the use of those development tiles.
Right. You also can get some points from those development tiles.
Yeah.
And what's also really cool about this game, I don't think we even touched on this in our video review, is this is part of a trilogy.
Yes.
And so there's going to be some more dovetailing off of this,
I think,
with different mechanisms,
different mechanisms and different eras.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I think the second one is out, I want to say.
Really?
Yeah. We did one little thing about this game is it does feel a little too short, as far as we feel like we need just a little bit more time to really get going what we want to get going.
Yeah, if we had just one more year, maybe.
And so it's probably a matter more of discovering how to be more precise.
More efficient.
More efficient. There
I think that's my
about
thing.
What you're doing. But the game, it feels quick. Like, and that's a good thing too. It doesn't drag, because a lot of these Euro style games sometimes can drag on. But this,
and I will say that that's why I don't feel like I'm necessarily much of a Euro gamer. Mm-hmm. I prefer Amerithrash, whatever you call it, because of that aspect. Yeah. I feel like it can just take forever.
But this one is, it's executed very well.
Yes, it is. It definitely is.
Yeah.
And I will say it again, please check out our video review of it to get a better understanding of what we're trying to say in this audio podcast about it.
And I mean, and you can see our full rating, final rating of it, but we did give it a seal of excellence because it is excellent.
Mm-hmm. And that is Hospital Connect.
From Capstone Games.
Do you know what's been a long time coming, Spencer?
Santa Claus.
Well, he's still a long time coming. Because it's October, but I will say it's my latest installment of Game Night Grub. Since it is October, and all things pumpkin are in the air.
Hey, that's not exclusive to October anymore. That starts in August.
Oh, touche.
We were at Great Wolf Lodge in August, and I got a pumpkin spice latte at the... Starbucks there.
I guess I didn't realize that you did that.
Yeah, I got it twice.
Oh my gosh. Well, I love baking pumpkin treats, pumpkin bread, pumpkin muffins, and I came across this pumpkin chocolate chip cookie recipe, and it's delightful.
Yeah.
I absolutely adore this. And what I liked about it was when I was looking for recipes, there's a lot of different ones that I do want to try. There are things that are oatmeal chocolate chip pumpkin cookies, which I love those things together. Like, I've got a muffin recipe that fits that. But I had all the ingredients for this one.
Ooh.
And that made me super happy.
Okay. So what are order in these?
Well, obviously, pureed pumpkin.
Mm.
Cinnamon, nutmeg, cloves, ginger. All good those stuff. Lovely things when I'm making pumpkin bread, the smells, delicious. Vanilla, flour, eggs.
All that's stuff you it. Might have sugar, in your house.
Other brown than sugar.
Other than pumpkin puree, maybe.
I don't know. I've got to confess to you, every time I go to Aldi, I pick up a can of pumpkin puree.
Every time, eh?
Yep. Every trip I get at least one can.
Oh.
It's like 79 cents for a can. Anyway. I love the way this recipe turned out. The cookie, they don't even taste,
they're
I would say the texture,
light.
It's like a little lump of cake.
Well, that, or it's like a muffin cookie.
Yeah.
It's a muffy. Or a
really?
Cuffin.
Okay.
I'm probably going to say a bad word or something.
It'll be totally misconstrued. I will say the thing I didn't follow on this recipe is that it called for semi-sweet chips and milk chocolate chips, but I didn't have enough milk chocolate, so I did semi-sweet and dark chocolate chips.
Ah, there's the dark chocolate.
Because I love dark chocolate, and they were fantastic. And it's really funny because the semi-sweet are mini chips, and the dark chocolate are really big.
I didn't even notice that.
So there's just, these two different sizes.
You just throw them
in your mouth and go, these are so good.
Well, that's my verdict. These are amazing, and I want one right now.
I know.
In fact, as soon as we're done recording, I'm going to get one.
I mean, they're just so fluffy and airy.
These would go great with milk.
Yes, they would. I wouldn't dip them in, though.
No.
I don't think.
No.
Just because they could fall apart because they are just so light. But great at the table.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is perfect if you're going to do a Halloween game night.
Mm-hmm.
Or even November, because pumpkin. Oh, who are we kidding? Pumpkins year-round. Do this whenever you want to. I know.
I know, but it's a comfy, cozy one. So maybe if you have like a game day planned, this is a great one to have baked. And it's a super quick recipe to do. They only bake for like 12 minutes in the oven. And so it's great at the table. They're not too crumbly. Surely you're not going to hold it in your hand long enough that the chocolate chip would melt on your hand. I think this is a great one. I'm going to recommend it for that, for an all-day game day. I think that's a good one to take along. And so this is pumpkin chocolate chip cookies.
All right. Well, now it is exciting times. We are going to welcome to the show our friend Mike Young, the lead communications for Plan B Games. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, Spencer. Hey, Laura. Thank you so much for having me on.
We're so excited that you could come on the show and be with us. You're becoming quite a bit of a celebrity with content creators and whatnot. So, we have Mike Young.
I don't know about that. I have way too much humility to take any sort of like pride in it. But I'm just honored to be on the show with you guys because, honestly, I love the dynamic of you two. Plus, as a married guy with kids, it's nice to see people like me sharing similar thoughts or giving me any advice or suggestions. So it's genuinely an honor to be on board.
Oh, well, thank you, Mike. Goodness. That's very nice. And I can speak from personal experience. Mike is just a super nice, knowledgeable guy. We had the pleasure of meeting him at Dice Tower Con.
Mm-hmm.
And he was all about, hey, guys, I got these awesome games to show you. I'll work them into my schedule, whatever works for you.
Mm-hmm.
And, so it's been great to get to know you a little bit better over the internet, and now it's awesome to get to talk to you on the show. So thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure. Again, genuinely, it's anything I can do to accommodate for you guys. It's like I said, my honor and privilege. So,
well why don't we have you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Who are you, and what are you doing on the Married Board Games podcast?
Wow. Sure.
Well, long story short, I'm lead communications, like you mentioned, with Plan B and with Pretzel Games. Both of these are owned by the larger company, Plan B Games. As lead communications, I kind of look at it as wearing multiple hats on my one head. I'm kind of responsible for social media presence on some of the more active forums like BGG, convention presence, kind of helping organize volunteers and stuff like this, as well as to develop a national volunteer force here in the U.S. to just be out there to have a presence out there so people can recognize our games and see them out in the wild rather than just through advertisements. Also, I guess I'm kind of a voice for the company because oftentimes, if you're interacting with us in some capacity, it's probably coming through me unless it's explicitly a customer order. And then on the last part of it, I kind of help develop some campaigns with our marketing department to generate some interest in our upcoming titles and releases and ultimately just kind of, work with media as well as with reviewers like you guys just to make sure that people are aware of some of the fantastic titles that we're bringing to the market and so that people can see some of the cool things that we've been working on.
That's awesome. And before we move on to some more, a little bit about Plan B, you have a really neat personal history in the game industry, don't you? Like, can you talk a little bit about like the kinds of games, the projects that you've worked on before you came on with Plan B?
Yeah, sure. So it was about like 4 or 5 years ago. I joined up with Z-Man Games, who had just kind of developed their own volunteer force. And I was quick friends with the person who was running this, Kalinda Patton, who's just a saint. But I was doing a lot of demos and doing a lot of events for them just to, again, generate interest, get people out there. Well, they grew pretty quickly because Z-Man Games is a pretty recognizable name. Even back then, go back 5 years ago, they were still really well known.
Oh, yeah.
So I ended up managing their Southeast region's volunteers. And for some reason, I just love it. Gaming's been passionate of mine since I was a little boy. So I started asking, what can I do? Can I do more? Can I help out more? And eventually, it kind of led me into doing proofreading for documents, localization for foreign text into English, some rules editing. I even generated some original stories for some of their games and created some lore for their games. So it kind of grew out of that, and I started working with a couple other publishers and even did some game development and game design work on the side, which I think along the way just kind of helped build a small reputation, because it's a niche community.
Yeah, definitely.
What an awesome resume you have. I just have to say that. And
I'm honestly very, very humble, because some of the people I'm working with, it just kind of feels like I'm standing on the shoulders of giants, because I've worked with Matt Leacock before, and I've worked with obviously Z-Man Games, and I've worked with some of the most talented people in this industry. And when you're in development, it's kind of a quiet side. People, you're not the designer, you're not the explicitly the publisher, you're the staff behind the scenes, and it's so cool and so neat to be a part of this process, and now to go from doing it freelance and moonlighting to make it my full-time job, it's awesome. I mean, I told my wife, and she's like, you have to do it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, so I'm very grateful for her support on this adventure that we're doing together.
Awesome.
That's really neat.
Well, okay, so we've got your story. Let's go back a little bit to Plan B Games. So it's a relatively new company, right?
Well, I mean, yeah. So I kind of say that it's a new company with an old soul, because we've only been a company for less than a year now.
Mm-hmm.
However, within this company has some of the most vetted people in the industry. Sophie Gravel, who is the president, she's been in this industry for 15 years, 20 years. I don't want to age her, but she's been doing hobby gaming and design and development for years. And Martin Bouchard, who's a game developer, casual designer, marketing, he's been doing it for about the same amount of time as well. Our illustrative staff includes like Chris Williams, who's done iconic covers like mm-hmm. Pandemic. He's done Flick 'Em Up. He's done Merchants and Marauders.
Mm-hmm.
Philippe and some of our graphic designers, they were former F2Z and Z-Man employees who followed Sophie into this new endeavor. So while we're new, they're a very experienced and vetted staff.
Excellent. And so the titles that have been published for now for Plan B, what are those?
Well, you would probably most recognize us for Century Spice Road, which was a smash hit for us.
Yes,
I would say so. We released it
at Origins, and it's crushed our wildest expectations in terms of sales, and it continues to do well. We released Century Golem at Gen Con, which, again, an instant hit. We had difficulty convincing international publishers and distributors to carry this game, so we decided to self-distribute out of the convention and out of our web store, and it's sold really well. It's been doing incredibly well. And then we have Azul for our upcoming Essen release.
Yes, and we just talked about that on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And so everybody
heard we've already given them a little bit of an earful on that one. And hopefully you've got some people excited to see that one.
Yeah, so if you're going to Essen, check that one out. And if not, Mike, is there a retail release date for that one?
You know, so we've had a slight delay in shipping. I don't have the updated timeframes, but I still think it's going to be comfortably before the holidays.
Cool.
So I imagine you'll find them in your retailers in November, maybe early December at the latest.
So put it on your Christmas list.
Yeah, put it on your Secret Santa list for BGG.
Cool. And so I noticed with these games, because we've played both of them, they're more like an entry level kind of game, would you say? Like, they're not definitely not complex. Is that the MO of Plan B Games?
Yeah, I would say so. I think that's a pretty good assessment. So, you know, we have different lines, right? So Pretzel is our dexterity line, and if you haven't, mm-hmm. you know, not aware of that, that's Junk Art and Flick 'Em Up. with more titles coming. But Plan B has really, you know, especially since we've acquired Eggertspiel, it's really been defined as like that entry-level Euro game market. Stuff that's very accessible for your family to play. The kind of stuff that you'd want to lure them over with. Not the chunky 2-3-4 hour heavy, you know, economic simulations.
Not Terra Mystica, right, Mike?
I wish, but no. But but that's why we have Eggertspiel. So Eggert then handles all of our heavy, because they're a German design studio. They're, you know them for Great Western Trail and for Mombasa and some of these other chunky games, which are great gamer games, but they're not the best to introduce your, you know, your non-gaming friends or family too.
Right, exactly. Which is perfect because that's what we're talking about today with our top five list. Mm-hmm. We're talking about our top five gateway games. So we'll get to that here in a second. But Mike, do you have any secrets or...
we're talking... Okay.
Board game secrets.
Mike, we're talking about board games. So that's it. Let's put some parameters on that there, Spencer.
As far as, you know... I like to get the anticipation train going as early as possible. So I know, I understand your position you're in, so if you can't reveal anything, that's fine. But is there anything that you can say about future games with any of the companies you represent?
I can tell you this, because we're not really, like you said, we're not really ready to announce anything yet, but I'm really looking forward to our next season's worth of games. So Pretzels, very deep, and I think we actually completed our next Pretzel title. We're going to be finalizing some rules on that soon, and I'm very excited because obviously when Century was announced, one of the subtle hints that we baked into the box is that if you look on the side of the box, there's two other Century games. They're sequels, and these are mixable sequels so that I can take components from 1 and 2 and mix them together, or 1, 2, and 3 and put them together, and play slightly different games, slightly modified games with, you know, using components from the other one. So I've seen Century 2. I'm really excited about that. It's shaping up to be on time for an Origins release. But it takes Century and just brings it just a little more game to it.
That's
which
awesome.
Century is already really good, but. Right. I like it just because it just adds a little plus one. So if you have someone who just likes a slightly heavier game, and we're not talking a lot more, Century 2 is going to really scratch that itch, I think, for you.
Oh, I'm excited. I love Century.
Well, we just had that on our top 100 list.
Yeah.
Oh.
And so, yes, for the Dice Tower. And so, man, if we were to make one next year, we might have to update it with this one just from the sound of it.
Definitely.
I wish I can give you some spoilers on there, but I'm telling you, if you're a fan of the first one, you're definitely going to want to get the second.
Oh boy,
so
oh boy.
Cool.
Mike, do you have anything else that you would like to say?
About Plan B or Pretzel or anything coming up, either the beginning of next year or like what's going to wrap up the season or anything?
Well, we're not going to be making any formal announcements until next year for stuff that's going to be released in 2018. But if you haven't done it already, I'm going to shamelessly plug Azul, even though I know you guys covered it. It's such a great game. It's such a pure, simple, accessible game. That's releasing at Essen. You can find it on our website if you want to order from us. We also have some really cool exclusive promo tiles to go for it.
Those are amazing. Those, are you talking about the Joker tiles?
Yes.
Those look so cool.
They are transparent acrylic with a really cool print on one side. And it looks gorgeous. The game already has a great table presence anyway.
Yes, it does.
But these tiles are just like, they blow all the other tiles out of the water. So had you guys been able to attend Gen Con, I would have showed you early copy of them. But nonetheless, you guys will need to pick up a pair. But folks at home, if you haven't, you know, again, just go down to your FLGS. They're usually pretty responsive. Tell them to order you in some, because this is going to be one of those hot games of the season. I guarantee it.
Oh, I definitely 100% agree with you. It's just, it's so smooth, So, like you said, it's so accessible. And now I'm going to put the onus on you, Mike. You come to BGGCon and show us those tiles.
Yeah.
Trust me, I would do it in a heartbeat. We have a family wedding that weekend, which, of course, and it's a destination wedding in Tennessee.
Well, hopefully we'll at least see you next year at Dice Tower.
We'll definitely cross paths at Dice Tower. I'm certain of it.
Awesome. Good, that'll be
good,
great.
Good. That's
well, let's news. Move on to our top five gateway games. So
normally, our listeners know the way that this goes is we just start at number five, and we just kind of we don't go in a particular order.
No,
and
we just change things up each time. I do want to do let's talk about a little bit of what to us, you know, how we made this list and
okay.
and what our criteria. Was. I'll start. For me, these may not be what some may consider like quintessential gateway games, but I was looking for games that I almost kind of looked at a game for each mechanism that was good to introduce to non-gamers and kind of have an accessible theme, but easy to, you know, look at, easy to understand games, but also that introduced you know, some different style mechanisms to lead them on to next step games. That's what I was looking for. What about you, Mike?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's so tough because I don't consider gateway its own genre.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking the same thing, like what would be representative of a particular type of genre or what's the most accessible or at least in my relative experience, what's been the most successful at bringing people over or interesting, you know, games that kind of, at least I see some sort of reaction with my friends yes. and family.
Very good. What about you, Laura?
Well, I tried to think back to, it's been about a year since I was on Throat Punch Lunch mm-hmm. and my segment specialized in bringing people into the hobby and, what
sharing
kind
the
of,
love.
Yes, I was sharing the love and ways, games that would be really good for that as far as like the theme, if that's exciting to people. And then hand in hand with that also like how the mechanism works. Is it easily accessible to non-hobby gamers? And so that's what I tried to look at and think about as I compiled my list.
Excellent. And I will say about my list, while they are ranked – there's really not a whole lot of I can't really say that five is so much better than number one. They're really in order of preference for me to play them, but I wouldn't say that their one is really a whole lot better than the other. Just
yeah,
to say,
I mean, same here. When it comes to my list, it's like trying to choose the first amongst equals, and what's going to be one great game for one person is going to be a completely different experience for another person. So
exactly.
I feel the same way.
Cool. Well, enough talking about our lists. Let's actually do them. Mike, would you like to go first?
Sure. Absolutely. Should. So, my first one on here is it's kind of become a modern classic, at least for us. I was thinking about a gateway game that's very accessible based on the game Clue, which is deduction, trying to figure out the mm-hmm. murder weapon and the location and the murderer. So it was a natural fit for me to choose Mysterium because the theme's very accessible based on people's
yep.
previous experience with Clue. Mm-hmm. And I mean, gosh, the art's gorgeous on there and it's wonderful table presence. And it doesn't take more than 2 or 3 minutes to learn the rules.
I think that's a great pick.
Totally. Like you said, the artwork and then just the present. It's also an immersive, I feel like, game too. That
exactly. Exactly. And the cards are so rich with stories in there that it's wonderful as a player that I can look at this and just kind of like interpret the meaning of these things because that's
mm-hmm.
the point of the game, right? You're trying to decode these psychic messages for those who may not have played it at home. You're given
right.
these abstract, like very weird, surreal images and from a ghost who's trying to tell you how they were killed or who killed them. And are they trying to tell me based on the color or something that's going on in the art? And it's wild to watch people like just start vocalizing why they think that, you know, I was given this card.
Yeah.
I think it's wild to try to keep your face straight as you listen to them and they start going in the wrong direction.
Look, he has cheese. It's cheese. It's cheese. It's got to be the pudding. What?
Oh, that's good.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely a good one for this list. I would agree with that. All right, Laura, what about you? What's your number five?
My number five is Machikoro, the Bright Lights Big City edition, just because I think it just simplistically puts out there the engine building mm-hmm. idea of you're making this city, you only have this much money, and you have to get the right kinds of cards for whatever people are rolling on their dice.
Mm-hmm.
I also think it's really fun because of the whole you have to be paying attention to what your cards say.
Yeah.
To make sure that if somebody rolls something, you are getting what you deserve when they roll. Because mm-hmm. it's easy to miss. Oh my gosh, I should have gotten paid on that when yep. he rolled that six or whatever. And that's pretty much it. Also, the artwork is really neat on mm-hmm. that. It's a different kind of artwork that I haven't seen.
Well, and I think that one especially, it was a Target exclusive, goes to show that this has kind of a wide appeal mm-hmm. to audiences, that it's not just sold in a game store, that it's actually in Target.
Yeah, no, cool. Exactly. I mean, I can tell you from a publisher perspective, we have distributors that handle hobby as well as mass market differently. And that game, Ground Up, was a great gateway game. I mean, it's simple to learn and fun.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
So good selection, Machikoro. All right, my number five. This one's a little known game, I feel like. It kind of flew under the radar at the end of last year. Haven't seen a lot about it. And this is Starfall. This is from IDW and Pandasaurus Games. I think like one of their last joint titles together. And this is by Scott Alms. Now, I picked this one because it's a great way to teach some set collection aspects. It's a really good looking game. I like the stark colors. You got the dark blue, and then you've got those cool wooden stardust tiles, mm-hmm, the orange and the white. And you've got that cool little star, the track thing in the middle that you're moving those tiles, and you're trying to collect these tiles. And on those tiles, there are stars. There are different
clouds, comets,
black holes. And you've got that neat little mechanism where on your turn, you move a tile down this little track, and the further down you get it, the less expensive it is. But the more times you pass on it, the more times you're giving your opponent to buy it before you do.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really easy to teach, very basic concepts in there, and it's quick. Yes. And I find that every time I introduce this to people, they have a great time with it, and especially non-gamers too. And so based on my experiences I've had with it, that's why I put Starfall on this list.
I'm taking notes of this one because I have not even heard of this one. So
yeah,
it's really
cool under the radar.
Yeah, like I said, it came out like we just saw it at the game store.
It really was just a, hey, look at that on the
shelf. Scott Alms, he's done the Tiny Epic series, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and like, yeah. So he's got designer pedigree there, right there. So
he's one of those designers that he surprises. Like, I'll be looking at a game, I was like, what? Scott Alms designed this? And it's like he's got a game like every 2 months that he's announcing that he's designing.
He's so busy.
Yeah. So, yeah, Starfall. Laura, would you like to kick number four off?
Sure thing. Number four, it's one that, again, with the theme and the mechanisms, easily accessible to non-gamers. That's Potion Explosion. I like the way that Spencer always introduces it, and so I've kind of stolen that. It's like, do you play Candy Crush? If you play Candy Crush, you can definitely mm-hmm. get on the Potion Explosion train. And I think, again, it's something that really grabs the eye when it's out on the table with the marble dispenser and everything. And it's so challenging sometimes depending on the player count, to be able to find where you're going to get a chain reaction
mm-hmm.
for explosions. But I think component wise, it's just a really great game. And that's another reason those potion models, those are really fun to look at mm-hmm. and the names of the different potions.
But yeah, it's a fun, again, this is one that's got that nice like table presence
mm-hmm.
and all the names of the different ingredients got a nice kind of immersive feeling. You feel like you're crafting these potions with the dragon's whatever, unicorn tears and ogre mucus and all that.
Yuck. And I think that's a good way to bring people into the hobby. Mm-hmm. And that's why I put it at number four. That's Potion Explosion.
All right. I'll go next at my number four. I love cooperative games. And most people will say, oh, the number one cooperative game you should introduce people to is Pandemic. I think there are some that might have a wider appeal as far as theme. And for me, by the same designer, it's Forbidden Desert. I think that this is, I prefer this one over Forbidden Island. And I just think that the idea of you've crash landed in this desert and you're trying to find these parts to this cool flying machine.
Steampunk.
Yeah, yeah, it's a less stressful atmosphere than trying to save the entire world.
Especially if you get to play with the ship at the end.
Yes.
When you put it together.
It's the still...
I'm picturing, Mike, you probably play with that little ship, don't you?
Oh my gosh, no, all of them. All of these little toys and stuff like that, of course.
Yes.
I think we broke one of the propellers.
Yeah, one of the things broke off, unfortunately. But it's still, it does the same, you know, it's the basic concept of the cooperative game. And, you know, you've got essentially a number of actions that you can do mm-hmm. on your turn. Each player has a different character that has a different ability, mm-hmm. and you do your turn, then the game has a turn. It's very quintessential cooperative game. But it's, again, it's great at introducing and bringing new people into the hobby. So that's Forbidden Desert, and it always makes me thirsty when I play.
Right? Yeah.
All right, Mike, what is your number four?
Well, you know, I was thinking the same thing about cooperative games, and I am a huge fan of Pandemic. But I think my choice is a slight variant on that. It's Letters from Whitechapel. And Letters from Whitechapel, it's there's a couple mechanisms. It's kind of a longer game, but it's a cat versus mouse game. It's usually 2, 3, 4 against one. One person plays as Jack the Ripper in Victorian London, and he every night and every night's around, he'll attempt to murder someone, and then he has to make his way back to his hideout, while everyone else plays the police, who then have to hunt Jack down. How they do this is that they alternate turns. Jack's got a hidden, like a screen in front of him where he can hide his recorded movements. He's going to be moving on little circles to get back to his hideout, where the alternate of the circle is like a square, and the police will move on squares, and they're going to look for clues. And if they find a clue, because Jack was there earlier that round, they're going to leave a little token behind. So over the course of these 4 or 5 rounds, the police are deducing where Jack's hideout is, because the win condition for the police is to either catch Jack or to discover his hideout. Whereas Jack's only mission is to get from his murder victim back to his hideout by the end of the round. But it's so cleverly designed and so accessible in terms of mechanisms, because it's really simple. You only do one of three things, but they really lead to epic game nights where your friends and family are just like, no, he's over here. No, he's over here. And Jack can take his time getting back to his hideout. It isn't necessarily a beeline. So when mm-hmm. I play as Jack, I'll meander my way around to my path to try to throw them off my scent.
Wow.
It's a great game. Again, it runs a little long. It's like 1.5-2 hours, but uh-huh. it doesn't feel that way because everyone's involved and there's very little downtime except for when the police reset at the end of each round. And
that's, I think that's key. Yeah, the downtime with these gateway games, because you don't want to give, you know, newer gamers that downtime, that feeling of, oh, is this what every game is like, where you're sitting around doing nothing? So I think that's great. And, you know, this is one we've always looked at and had our eye on. We just have not played this one.
I know. Yeah. Especially the theme. Yeah. It's definitely something that I'm interested in.
I'm told that that because they just recently, basically, I think they did a revised edition of this called
Whitefall.
Yeah. I'm told that it kind of streamlines the rules even more and streamlines the gameplay to shave off a little bit of that downtime even more. I haven't played it yet, but I'm really excited about at least trying it.
Yeah. This one's definitely on my wish list.
I will. I tell you this much. I will bring it with me to Dice Tower Con because okay. it's such a fun game to play, and it's a riot.
It's I love hidden movement. So
yeah, yes. Laura loves Fury of Dracula.
Oh yeah. So I mean, this is simpler than Fury. This is the game that you'd want to introduce people to before they jump into Fury.
Oh,
awesome! Well, that sounds cool. Great. Number three. I'll start with number three this time.
Go for it.
Number three, deck building games are awesome. You want a pretty basic one to introduce to people, and you also want a theme that has a wide appeal to many people. And while I like, you know, superheroes, I like other things, I think that Harry Potter has a pretty wide appeal. And so I put Harry Potter Hogwarts Battle at number three, just because this game does a great job of easing people into the full game, with each book essentially adding new cards, new rules. This is a very great way to teach a deck building game to somebody. It's cooperative, so you don't have to worry about, I can't really help you out because I'm
trying to beat you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. This one, with it being cooperative, it's great at, you know, say, okay, maybe now might not be the best time for you to play that card, or please play your card now, or, how to use your abilities to work together,
mm-hmm.
or you share in the misery when all of the dark marks come out.
Right.
I think they did a great job with this one. There are a few little things that could be improved upon, which I think they did when they brought out the expansion. But I think this is a great one to introduce that. And so,
no, I agree completely. I mean, this game is like, you're right. It eases people into it, mm-hmm. because, those who don't know it, like, you have books within the game, and after you've completed one book, you go to the next one, and then it usually introduces a new game mechanism so that you're not thrown into the middle of the deep end of the pool, mm-hmm. without learning.
Which is easy to do, because especially, yeah, once you get to book seven, you realize,
oh my gosh, whew. Yeah,
man, yeah, I think there's a drastic turn,
mm-hmm.
In book four,
yeah,
well, which, yes. I mean,
of course, thematically, that fits if you were more of a book fan than a movie fan. Well, I guess the movie, too. Yeah, it definitely takes a big turn in book four. But yeah, I like that it progresses, mm-hmm. that way.
Cool. All right, let's go with Mike. Mike, what's your number three?
I have to, for full admission, I have to go with my favorite dexterity game of all time, and that's Junk Art. When this was originally developed, Pretzel was part of F2Z, and I was part of the proofreading and some of the development team on that. I wasn't, I was freelancing this, but I really, really love Junk Art. So those who don't know Junk Art, basically, I kind of introduce it as Jenga deconstructed. So Jenga, you have all these little alternating tile, like these little blocks, and it's you pull one out, you stack it on top. So the element it borrows from there is a stacking game, but the twist in the game is that there's all kinds of radical different shapes. There's a dozen or 14 different shapes and sizes. So, you know, some of these will be balls, some will be like flower pots, some will be dumbbells, some will be planks with holes drilled in them. And the game inside the box includes 12 city cards, which each city plays a little different than the next. Sometimes it's stacking to the tallest structure. Sometimes it's stacking in a cooperative sense on a common structure. Sometimes it's a speed. And it's so good because it's so accessible. I mean, it looks great because the colors are really bright and vibrant. And mm-hmm. the game is just it's just a blast to play. Anyone I can introduce this to, I do. I have a really varied family. Like my wife's, you know, I think she would consider herself a casual gamer. Her mom, who loves card games, like, you know, she'll do canasta all night long. Her stepfather, who's former military, Master Chief in the Navy, doesn't have time for games, loves playing Junk Art. The kids love it. So it's one of those games that I think it's just very appealing because you know what to do without actually having to be explicitly told. There's a couple minor rules, and each city just scores a little differently. That's it.
That's super neat.
But it's a great game.
Yeah. Well, this is one that, again, this is another one that we haven't had a chance to play yet, but I love the pictures you've been posting, the different creations you've made, and then I always love seeing pictures of it on social media, so it's definitely one we want to check out. Oh my gosh.
Well, and I like yes. that you got a dexterity game on our list. I feel like when I've been considering dexterity games for this list, it's just hard to do, you know? And but that's a great one. That's a great place to start.
Well, very good choice. I strongly recommend it, and you know, it's for what it's worth, it's a blast to play, and it's so simple, and it's like I said, it's so accessible. It just has a great table presence, and I used to teach. I had kids in kindergarten, first grade, understanding how to do this to adults, retired adults who normally don't play games. So it says something about the universal appeal, not necessarily of theme, but just of mechanisms and how accessible it is.
Right, exactly. Well, awesome. Laura, what is your number three?
My number three is one of our regulars that this we talk about.
Definitely a go-to.
Bang the Dice game. I think it's that's an excellent one to bring people in. A lot of people understand like Yahtzee-style rolling. And I think it's so fun watching them try to figure out, deduce the hidden roles.
Yeah.
And I think that's really neat. And of course, I love dice, and I think that dice are appealing to people. And I think that's what makes it an easy sell on new gamers. And it's also got a wide player range.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you can get a lot of people in on this game and teach a whole bunch of people, a whole bunch of new people. So that's why I like this one, and it's on my list at number three, Bang the Dice Game.
Yes, that's a great one. I love it. Have fun with it every time. And I totally agree with you.
No, thank you. Bang's great. It's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I've been wanting to get my hands on, there's an expansion that adds like a ghost.
Something.
Yeah, there's two dice and some new rolls that I've been eyeing it at the game store. And I just need to bite the bullet, but
Bite the bullet.
Instead of the arrow.
Yeah.
Dang arrows, they get me every time.
Okay, well, enough of that. Let's move on to number two. So we are first introduced to this game as its two-player version. We played the two-player version before we played the full version. And this is Seven Wonders. Again, this is another one that you'll always see in Target, pretty much. And I feel like I'm probably in the minority based on Board Game Geek and other places in that I like the original version better than the two-player version.
And the dual game?
Yeah. I don't know why. I like the more people involved.
I do.
No, I do too.
I definitely do.
Completely.
Oh, you do? Oh, good. I'm not, well, at least on this podcast, I'm in the majority.
Right. Yeah. And I think it's amazing that, I mean, it's 10 years old, isn't it?
Seven.
7 years.
Because they celebrate, because it was like seven wonders, so they just celebrated the seventh
anniversary. Right. And it just still holds up so well.
Yeah, well, I mean, go ahead, Mike.
I don't mean to interrupt. It's such a great game because like I like the higher player counts because it's so rare to find a game that plays more than four, typically.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, this is like one of those games that I like to introduce people to when it comes to the drafting mechanism because it's such a great mechanism to play with. And there's set collection aspects of it. And usually that first game is a little clunky. Mm-hmm. But once you've learned the symbols and you kind of learned how scoring works, second game screams. And it doesn't matter your player count. The games always last no longer than 25, 30 minutes.
Yeah. Well, and you're absolutely right that because goes up to seven players, right?
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Seven. There but, it is again.
You know, most games with a high player count like that are usually party games. And, you know, there's not a lot of a challenge.
All right.
You know what I mean. I'm like, Bang the Dice game is fun. But, like, it's more of a
this
party
is a thinky
style.
Game
yeah.
with that set, I think, and like yes. Mike said, with that set collection.
Exactly.
That's what adds that extra element
and
to
when
it.
And the drafting, which card do I keep, which card do I pass along, it's great. And so I like this one. It's one I want to own. The problem is, I don't know if I feel like the $50 price point is appropriate 7 years down
that's
the line.
That's the other thing. It's been 7 years, guys.
Yeah, when you consider, like, I'm right there with you. When you consider the fact that really all you're doing is buying three decks of cards,
yes,
and a couple boards, it seems like an expensive investment for sure. Mm-hmm. And I used to justify purchases, maybe food for thought, for basically how many hours of entertainment is this going to provide, or how is my entertainment dollars being spent?
Right.
And that one, I think we probably played it no fewer than 30 or 40 times. And it's like,
wow,
it's paid for itself again, you know, multiple times over in the alternative cost of like going to movies or whatever. So,
well, I totally am with you there. And that's usually how I justify, you know, the games when we get them. I think I just have a little bit more trouble with this one since you said, like I said, it's just basically cards. But I'm sure it will make its way into our collection eventually because we do enjoy it so much. And that's Seven Wonders.
That's a good pick.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's solid.
I really like it.
Me too.
Let's see. Laura, what about you?
My number two, I'm sticking with my Western theme.
Oh.
And this is one that is actually a very tried and true gateway game that we've introduced to so many people, and that's Colt Express. I have a lot of fun, more so nowadays, with like program action and program movement. And there's the main thing, though, is we've got a different game on our shelf that I absolutely love, program action, program movement, but we've realized we really need to start people down lower level first before we get to that one.
That's Dragon and Flaggin.
Right, the Dragon and Flaggin. I absolutely adore that game, but we've got a lot of friends who are just not at that level yet. We need to get some more plays of Colt Express in.
You just have to introduce them to it as, look, you can't plan. I mean, you can try to plan, but more than likely what you plan is not going to happen, so just take it as it comes.
Right, but I just feel there's not as much there is plenty in Colt Express, mm-hmm. but there's a lot more in Dragon and Flaggin, and so I think it's best to start them out with that smaller. Totally. You can either climb up or down, you can move one car or another, you can pick stuff up, or you can shoot, or you can punch.
Yep.
That's basically it. In those other games, you've got like special abilities.
Exactly.
And all that stuff in Dragon of Flaggin. So let's start them out a little simpler before we move them up.
Well, and talk about table appeal.
Yeah, I mean, it has that cool train, right? That little 3D train.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not one to like boast about awards, but like I think this was up for Spiel des Jahres, which
it won.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So like this is a litmus test for like a proven, family friendly, accessible game.
Right.
Well, I'll say it may not have even been the train. It may have just been the cactus.
Cactus or the rock.
And the cow skulls.
Yeah. Yeah. This one's great. And just the memories that we've had playing this game, too, that I can just recall of just the chaos on this train, that people just die from laughter of what actually unfolds.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And
that's the
and
best
people.
Part.
Exactly.
It is.
And people will want to play it again and again.
And
so.
But that's my thing is, we have other games we can build upon from this one. And so that's why Colt Express is a great place to start. And it's at my number two.
Number two. All right, Mike, it's your turn.
Well, you know, I hate to sound like a shameless plug machine, but really I've been enamored with Azul so much. I played this in late prototype form back in May or June. And it literally just caught my imagination. It's so simple and so accessible. It's, you guys talked about it earlier, but basically you're drafting tiles, which is a mechanism I really love, and it's 100% open and perfect information. No one can, you know, there's no hidden information from your other players. So when you're drafting them, you're pulling tiles and then you place them, which between the table presence and the mechanisms and the accessibility, and it plays so differently at 2, 3, and 4 player counts that it's so good. And I think I'm at 40 plus plays now. Because it plays in 20 or 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, abstracts do well. But when I introduce this one, it looks great on the table. It's a lot of fun to play. It's very simple and just, yeah, it's a killer game.
Well, I definitely, you know, I can definitely see this one making its way onto our list eventually. It's just we haven't had 40 plays of it like you have. But we've enjoyed it so much what we have played, and I could definitely see all of the points that you've made and why, you know, it could be great to
it's accessible. It's simple choices without feeling overwhelming. You look at things, your board state's constantly changing. It's thinky without being overwhelming, and it's you know, it's really that it's that accessibility and the vibrancy of the pieces that just it's a blast to play. It really is.
Yeah, we love it. Well, great one. No worries about plugging as long as you feel like that's belongs on your list. So awesome. Well, let's move on to number one. Who wants to go first?
Let's let Mike do it as our guest.
Go for number one first.
Well, gosh, the game I chose is probably my family's favorite game, so I have a little bit of bias on this. So I did rank it number one for a reason, and it's probably the game we probably played the most with well over 100 games, and it's Ticket to Ride. It's it's one of these just very simple concept games. A lot of people, I mean, people joke that it's gin rummy with a board, but you have card drafting, you have some hidden information, you have secret objectives. It can be a little competitive when you're drafting your cards as to blocking people certain colors.
Oh, yeah.
It can be a little competitive when you take someone's route and you know that you're taking their right. Like my wife, who, if you ever played a game with her, she doesn't play to win so much as she plays to beat me. So as she sees me going down the Mississippi River with my different routes, she goes, "Oh, you needed that route from Dallas to Houston? Boom, sorry." And just like just blocks me. And it's so fun. It's so accessible. It plays so quick. And I mean, we got to the point where we were playing it two or three times a night with her folks. We would go over there.
Wow.
Just bang out game at one, boom, one after the other. And something about the pieces and the accessibility and the easy to learn rules, and it's number one for a reason. And this is a tried and true classic. So if your listeners haven't got this one, this is definitely another good one.
That's an excellent choice, and you have all great points. And I don't have anything else to say. You hit
the nail on the head there.
I'll go next.
Okay.
And you can go last. Because that's how it works.
Yes.
because there's nobody else. Okay, so my number one is Jamaica. I don't see this one out and about as much. And I don't know why, but I love it. Pirates. Again, people like pirates. It's a racing game. You're racing your ship around an island.
And you get to duel sometimes.
Yep. You can fire cannons at each other. You've got this amazing artwork in this game.
Oh, I love it.
That looks so great. It's very simple. You pick a card that has the actions on it, and then you roll some dice. Right? Forget. You roll the dice first, right?
Yes. One person will roll the dice
and
place one for your day action, one for your night action.
Right.
You have three cards in your hand to select from.
Right. So you're either moving or you're moving forward, back. You're
getting food. You're getting money, collecting powder.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's great. It's fun to race. It's also fun to collect that gold. And it's one of those where it's like,
I like it when everybody's trying to get the treasure.
Yeah.
And the first person gets to that first treasure, and you all go, "Ah, man, I wanted to get that."
Yeah.
Yes. Exactly. And it's what I like about it, and some people may not like that about it exactly, but is you go in with one strategy and it ends up you have to change it
like for not.
Three or four times throughout the game just because of how those dice turn out. And
oh, some of those treasures really are,
yeah,
they suck. Yeah. I'm just going to say some of them suck real bad.
Some of them are really good. But
I like the fact that you mentioned this, because this is it's a really good game, and this is also a Bruno game.
Yes, we love him.
Which, we love him.
I love him as a designer. And I think they just released an expansion where he's working
they
on
did.
An expansion.
The Crew.
Yes.
That was available at Gen Con for some people. I don't think
And it sold out.
Yeah. We had a mule tried to get it for us. That's not a derogatory term. That's someone trying to get the mule for us.
We anyway. Had a couple of someone's trying to get yeah. it for us. And as soon as they got to their booth, to the
yeah. so
GameWorks
I don't,
booth, they said, sorry, we're out.
I don't know if it's available yet, but as soon as it is, we want it. And, you know, this is a perfect example. I introduced this to my sister and her husband, and they're not gamers at all, but they really like this one so much so that she asked for it for Christmas, and I got it for her for Christmas. So
spoilers.
Yeah. well, no, not this year.
Oh.
It was a previous year. Yes. Hey, Mike, I'm not that much of a planner. There's no way I'd have Christmas gifts this early.
No way.
So, but yeah, my number one gateway game is Jamaica.
Well, my number one, of course, another dice game, because mm-hmm. I love dice, and that's Flatline from Renegade and King Klinko.
How is this one?
I love this game. And you know what? We actually played this before we played Fuse,
mm-hmm.
and I like it better than Fuse.
Oh, totally. There's more game to it.
I think so.
Yeah.
I like all the color schemes, really bright, fun colors, and the way the real-time element works in this compared to Fuse, I just think
it's less stressful.
Not as stress-inducing because you only have a minute to place your dice, everybody, but then you've got like some planning between each of those rounds.
And strategizing.
Yeah, you could talk and decide, you know, what we're going to focus on and whatnot with those dice, and then weigh the cards play out, the trauma cards and emergency cards and all that. Oof, it can get pretty tense, but I think it's very neat. And with all the different patients that go on the board and the different ways to solve those different levels of trauma on them with mm-hmm. like only one person can play dice here, or two people have to play here, or two or more have to play here, all those different things. And you're in the middle of a minute and you're all yelling at each other, somebody put a yellow dice over here. And why did you put that dice down? Because we've become sticklers of if you put a dice down, you can't pick it back up.
Well, that's the rule. So,
and I don't know. I recently was at a FLGS and taught this game to some people. And I don't know how many times they put some dice down. And I went, nobody else can play there. Nobody, you didn't ask.
Yeah.
And then they, oh, okay. Well, no, you can't pick it back up. And we I probably sounded like a crazy woman.
It looks really appealing. I mean, it sounds very interesting because I love the medical theme. Like, that's one mm-hmm. of the reasons I like Pandemic. So mm-hmm. this is definitely one that's going to be on my must play list.
We highly recommend it, Mike. And I think you'd enjoy this one.
Most definitely.
I actually, to be honest with you, enjoy Pandemic the Cure more than Base Pandemic because I love dice rolling.
Okay.
And we haven't played The Cure. How awful is that? I know.
We're working on it.
We are. We know somebody who has it. We're just trying.
Our paths are just not crossing.
I think I'm going to compile a list for Dice Tower, and that's all we're going to do is just knock bucket games off your list.
That sounds great. That sounds awesome.
We're going to have a table reserved. We'll get P1.
Yeah, P1. Yeah.
Yeah. Dice Tower Con.
So, but I mean, we'll probably do a top 10 of 2017 this year, and this will definitely be on it. It's one mm-hmm. of our favorite games of the year for sure.
Definitely in the app, it makes the game very immersive with this lady kind of like shouting out all these different orders mm-hmm. in the middle of you trying to frantically place your dice and
lots of fun.
It is a lot of fun. So that's why I have it at my number one, and that's Flatline.
Well, what a great list of games, and there was no crossover.
None.
How about that? 15 different games. Which probably means this episode is pretty long. But hey, it was great. We're glad to spend time with you, Mike. You had an awesome list. Definitely. So we've got to check out Letters from Whitechapel.
Yes.
We've got to get some plays in of Junk Art.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike, you've got to play Flatline.
I'm really interested in Starfell as well.
Starfall. Yes.
So I think we both have some homework to do.
Yes, we do.
Well, hey, all three of us, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So now is about the time. Well, before we get to the contact information, if you have a favorite Gateway game, listeners, and you want to share it with us, maybe it's one we didn't mention, or you want to tell us about it, you could do that by tweeting it to us or whatever it toing us, right, Laura? How can they do that?
Well, our Twitter is at MarriedWithBG. Uh-huh. We have an Instagram account at MarriedWithBG, and we can also be found on Facebook.com/MarriedWithBG.
And if you don't use social media but you like websites, you can find our website at MarriedWithBG.com. And Mike, if people want to get in touch with Plan B, or they want to tag Plan B or Pretzel,
or go check out any of your posts,
exactly, what information should they get?
Easy enough. I mean, you can find us on Facebook. I think you just look for Plan B Games. To be honest with you, I don't know the web address, but you can also find us on Instagram at Plan B_Games. Twitter, we have Plan B Games_, and then I think we also have Pretzel Games. So if you have like any of your favorites out there that you'd really like, tag us in it. We'd love to see our fans enjoying the games that we produce. It honestly brings us a lot of happiness.
That's cool.
Awesome.
That's really awesome.
All right, Laura, do you have anything else for this show?
Nope.
All right. Well, if there is nothing else, this has been episode 28 of the Married with Board Games podcast. I'm Spencer.
I'm Laura.
And I'm Mike.
Thank you so much for listening.